All right, so this is bio 231, and it's August 26th. We're going to finish up connective tissue and then do some microscopy in a little bit, and then we'll move on to skin and look at some skin models. So does anybody remember where we left off? What were we looking at? Yeah, tissues. I think we got all the way through the epithelium. And we were looking at some connective tissues. All right, so let's review just a little bit. What are the four main kinds of tissues in your body? How many are there?
Four.
Yeah, there's only four, so that makes it really nice and easy. And they are? Yeah, connective tissue, epithelium, muscle, and nervous tissue. They all have different specializations, like muscle tissue is specialized to contract, and nervous tissue is specialized to stimulate, transmit information long distances, maybe to excited tissue or whatever, very quickly using electrical impulses. Epithelium is used to secrete, because epithelium makes glands, but it's also used to cover surfaces, to protect surfaces, or to protect the inside lining of, say, blood vessels, for instance. But glands are made out of epithelium. And connective tissue is to support the body, to connect different parts of your body together. And as a matter of fact, tendons connect a muscle to a bone. That's connective tissue. Blood connects different parts of your body together, not in a physical sense like a tendon, but in a functional sense, because blood will deliver oxygen from your lungs to all the different parts of your body. So blood connects your lungs with every place else in your body. It also connects endocrine glands with other target tissues everywhere in your body. It can deliver hormones all over the place. So we call that a connective tissue. Right. And how do we talk about an epithelium? How would we classify an epithelium? There's two ways: by shape of the cells, and then by the number of layers. Right. So there are three main kinds of shapes. There, flat or squamous. Then there's cuboidal, and then there is columnar. Right, so flat, cuboidal, columnar would be by shape, and then by number of layers. So simple is just one, and then other than that, there just would be many if it's greater than one, and then you just call that stratified. So that's how we talk about epithelia. And what's right underneath? What's just deep to an epithelium? The basement membrane. So that's how you see that it's an epithelium. Look for a basement membrane and then the apical surface, and you know that it's not a connective tissue, you know it's not muscle, you know it's not nervous tissue, that it's really an epithelium. Okay, and then just look and see how many layers it has and what the shape of the cells are. There's one epithelium that's kind of strange. It's not cuboidal, it's not columnar, it's not flat. That's in the bladder, and it's called transitional. They're shapeshifter cells. They can be flat when the bladder's full. They can look like a pillow when the bladder is voided. Okay. So we're going to look at some of those in further review in just a little bit. All right. But we were looking at connective tissues. And connective tissues are a lot different than epithelium, because the cells in an epithelium are glued closely together because they have desmosomes and tight junctions between them. So there's very little extracellular space in an epithelium. There's one cell right next to another. But in a connective tissue, let me know if you like it with the lights off. But in a connective tissue, that's not so. Is that better? But you're not going to, it is better? Don't fall asleep though. But in the connective tissue, notice that the cells are not right next to each other. They're actually separated from each other by long distances. So in a connective tissue, what's important is all the stuff in the extracellular space. As a matter of fact, it's so important, we give it a special name. What do we call the extracellular space in a connective tissue? It is called the matrix. All right, you guys got to keep that up on your pre-lecture reading assignment. I'm sure that was a question in there. All right, that would just make lecture more fun. So here you have that extracellular space. We call that the matrix of a connective tissue, and you can have different kinds of substances in the matrix. You can have these filaments in the matrix we call these fibers. You can have different fibers. You can have really thick fibers. That's collagen. They don't stretch. They give a lot of strength to the material. These are elastic fibers right here. What's the cool thing about an elastic fiber? You can stretch them and then let go. What happens? They go back to their original location, right? So your body goes back to where it should be. There's also reticular fibers, which are really, really thin. They're not strong at all, but they help kind of keep the tissue together just a little bit. All right, so these, where do we have these fibers? Inside of a cell or outside the cell? Outside the cell. And what do we call that special place in a connective tissue outside the cell? That is the, we start with an M. That's the matrix. Yeah, that's the matrix. Okay. So, but not only can you have fibers, but you have stuff called ground substance, which is the fluid part of the matrix, and that can actually be a solid as well, for instance, like in bone. So you have fibers and ground substance that make up the matrix of a connective tissue. This particular kind of connective tissue, we have these strong collagen fibers, and they're oriented. How are they oriented? In all kinds of different directions. Right, so it can withstand some tension in all different directions, but not a great amount of force in any one direction. We call this loose or areolar connective tissue, and it's pretty easy to see because when I look at it, it kind of reminds me of a stained glass window, right? All the little fractured patterns to it, all the little pieces, all the different colors in there. And in areolar connective tissue, you can even have adipocytes, so it can even have like little yellow areas in there as well. That's areolar, CT. What does CT stand for? Yeah, connective tissue. Okay, I'm going to come back to that one. Here's another kind of connective tissue. Oh, you know what? We got to name the cells that secrete these fibers into the matrix. They just don't show up there. They're secreted by these cells. Guess what we call these cells that secrete these fibers into the matrix? Yeah, those are fibroblasts. Okay. So fibroblasts always secrete fibers. Here is another kind of fiber. It's not long and linear. This has a pretty high magnification. They stain really dark. And are they long and linear? No, they look branched. It's highly branched. They stain very dark. These are the reticular fibers of a connective tissue. And reticular fibers are very weak. But if the organ doesn't experience any trauma, they're strong enough to hold the organ together. But if there's any kind of significant trauma to the organ, then these fibers just rip apart because they're not strong. They're not made out of collagen. And an organ that is made out of reticular connective tissue is the spleen. And probably you're all aware that the spleen, once it's damaged, can be damaged easily, and it's almost impossible to repair because it doesn't have collagen fibers to hold it together. Only these weak reticular. So if the spleen is lacerated and we put a place a suture there to close that laceration, guess what happens? The sutures rip the spleen apart even more. And what does that produce? More hemorrhage, right? So once the spleen is damaged, it can't be sutured back together. The part that's bleeding just has to be removed as a result of that. Because it only has what kind of fibers? The reticular, yeah, which is the weak kind. Okay. All right, another kind of tissue which is a lot stronger than reticular, it's got collagen, and a lot of collagen. We see that the cells are really far apart from each other. These still secrete collagen into the matrix, so these are called fibroblasts. And these collagen fibers, okay, kind of meander around. Here's some that are going in this direction and then come up, and looks like it starts to dive into the plane a little bit. Here's one that's coming right at you. So the orientation is varied, right? But still, there's a lot of collagen. It's pretty strong. It can resist tension in all kinds of directions. This is what we call dense irregular because the orientation of the collagen is what? It has an irregular orientation to it. Depending on where you're looking, it's oriented in all kinds of different directions. So this is a pretty tough kind of tissue. It's used to make joint capsules. So joints that are freely movable, we call those synovial joints, have a special capsule that helps to stabilize them. and improve mobility, and it's made out of this kind of tissue right here, dense irregular CT. Here is another kind of dense connective tissue, and the collagen is oriented all in one direction. It's oriented right to left. There's a little bit of a wave to it because it wasn't stretched out when the picture was taken, but the orientation is only in one direction. So this kind of material can withstand a lot of tension if we pull it from left to right. It just won't stretch. It's very, very strong. So this is what we call dense regular connective tissue to make up tendons and to make up ligaments. Right, so we see the long orientation of the collagen fibers, but if we pull on this material from top to bottom, what's going to happen? It's going to tear. Look at, we can separate out these collagen fibers. They will separate, that will tear, and it will fill up with fluid. So tendons and ligaments can be damaged if you use a joint inappropriately, like if you sprain an ankle or something, then the tendons don't have the force distributed on it the way that the joint was designed to work or evolved to work. Okay, another kind of connective tissue. Oh, look at that one. All right, I think I'm going to skip that. I'll show you another picture of elastic connective tissue. And another kind of connective tissue is cartilage. All right, so cartilage. This kind of cartilage can be found on the ends of bones, protecting the ends of bones. It also makes up some cartilage that come off of the ribs that attach it to the breastbone, which is the sternum right here. So cartilage is nice because it can bend and it's very lightweight compared to bone. So it has a structure, but it's a lot lighter than bone. When we look at it underneath the microscope, we see these little bubbles. And inside of a bubble is a cell. Here you can see the nucleus of that cell. Here's a cytoplasm. The bubble is what we call a lacuna. And the cell that we find in cartilage is no longer really called a fibroblast. It's called a chondrocyte. Guess what chondro means? It means cartilage. Yeah, so chondrocyte just means cartilage cell. All right, so all cartilage has these lacunae with chondrocytes in them. And if you look at this material right here, what do we call this space within a connective tissue? That's the matrix, right? You don't see any fibers. It's just ground substance. It's a soluble form of collagen. All right, another kind of cartilage right here. I see lacunae. I see these little bubbles, and inside the lacunae I see chondrocytes, because this is cartilage, but now it's just not ground substance. What else do we see? We see some fibers right here, and these are elastic fibers. So this is, and elastic fibers you can tell because they have a branching pattern to them. And so this kind of cartilage has a form, has a shape. It's really lightweight. That's nice, but you can bend it, right? And when you let go, what happens to it? Springs back to its original location, as long as you don't overdo it. It's easy to damage elastic fibers because they're not as strong as collagen. All right, so if you see a slide like this, right, you see chondrocytes and lacunae with elastic fibers. That's elastic cartilage. And what kind of tissue is cartilage? Yeah, it's a connective tissue, right? It's not epithelium, not muscle, not nerve. It's a connective tissue. And the last kind of cartilage, I see lacunae with chondrocytes in it. And now I see fibers, but all of these fibers are aligned in parallel sheets. And these are thick fibers. These are collagen fibers. This is the strongest kind of cartilage. We call this fibrocartilage, and it makes up the parts of the intervertebral discs because this is supporting great weight. These vertebrae right here would be crushing each other, but the discs help prevent that from happening. And you also have fibrocartilage in your knee to help protect your knee joint. Anybody know what those pads of fibrocartilage in your knee are called? As a matter of fact, you all know what they're called. Okay, they're called a meniscus. Okay, a knee meniscus, and hopefully nobody in here has ever torn one, but they can tear. And of course, these intervertebral discs can be ruptured as well if too much force is applied to the fibrocartilage. All right, another kind of connective tissue. This kind of reminds me of taking a botany class. Why is that? What do you see when you look at this slide? Yeah, I see all these ring structures. All right, I see rings upon rings upon rings. That table doesn't work so well. Right, rings upon rings upon rings. That kind of looks like tree rings of a tree when I look at the stem of a plant, a woody plant, right, or the trunk of a tree. But this is what bone looks like underneath a microscope. Right, and the tubular structure of bone makes bone very strong from compression. You can't compress bone as a result of that. And bone is a living tissue. So bone has to have living cells. And we find those living cells in these little bubbles right here. And again, what do we call those bubbles? They're lacunae. But now these are not chondrocytes, because a chondrocyte is a cell that makes cartilage. The cell that's associated with bone is called an osteocyte. So every time you see that term osteo, you should think of not muscle, not cartilage, but bone in particular, right? Osteo has to do with bone. Okay, and then there's some blood vessels in the very center of these structures. When we get to bone next week or the week after, we'll learn more about this. But what I want you to know is if you see a slide with all of these different circular layers, you're just automatically going to say, what kind of tissue is that? Bone is halfway right. Bone, and what's the tissue? CT, connective tissue. Yeah, don't say epithelium. Don't say bone muscle or bone nervous tissue or bone epithelium, because you know this is not epithelium, because look at how far apart these cells are, right? They're way far apart from each other. That's not an epithelium. Okay. All right, here's another kind of connective tissue. This one connects all the different parts of your body functionally, and it's kind of a strange connective tissue. Well, we know it's connective tissue because look how far apart the cells are. And this is the matrix right here. But in this particular tissue, the matrix is a fluid. Unlike bone, which is solid, calcium phosphate, right, this is a fluid. So this is blood CT. What do we call the fluid part of blood? Anybody know? It's not labeled on this slide right here, but that's plasma, right? So that's one part of blood. The other part of blood are these cells. And you should know what these cells are because they have these nice lead lines going to them. Here are some cells that are anucleate. What does that mean? No nucleus. These are red blood cells. They're loaded with a chemical that's used to transport oxygen in our body. That's hemoglobin. So they're loaded with hemoglobin for transporting oxygen. So there's no room for a nucleus in there. And these other cells right here are a kind of white blood cell. What do you think the function of a white blood cell is? So red blood cells carry oxygen. That's not the job of white blood cells. These are for? Exactly right. These are immune cells that fight infection, right? That keep us healthy. And in particular, this one right here, you can see that it's mostly just made up of the nucleus, a very little bit of cytoplasm. This is a lymphocyte. That's a dead giveaway. That's very prominent in blood. That's an easy cell to find. And this one over here, look at the nucleus. Look at its strange shape. It has many lobes. This is a very common white blood cell as well. This is what we call a neutrophil. Both of these fight infections. So I do want you to be able to recognize these two kinds of white blood cells on this particular slide right here. Okay, and here's something that's not labeled, so I won't hold you responsible for that on the practicum, but does anybody have an idea what this little thing is? It's really not an artifact. It belongs in your blood. Because, for instance, if you cut a blood vessel open, what happens? The blood is going to leak right out, right, because it's a fluid. And, as a matter of fact, your blood has to have properties so that when a blood vessel is damaged, that it stops bleeding. Yeah, we call that clotting or coagulation, and something that's really important to help that process is a platelet. Yeah, so that little cell fragment right there is a platelet. So we got platelets, red blood cells, and white blood cells. That's the cellular part of blood connective tissue. All right, so let me go back to another kind of atypical connective tissue. I just glossed over it very fast, which is this one right here. All right, this is adipose CT. And it looks like there's almost a worm crawling around in there, but that's not it. All right, so here is an adipocyte. We can see the cell membrane, nice and circular. Here is a little bit of cytoplasm with the nucleus. And most of the cell on the inside is filled up with a vacuole that contains fat. So, say that again. Fat? Is that what you're saying? Yeah? Okay. And a more proper name for fat is adipose. All right, so there is, so this is an adipose tissue. What's, and your body stores fat. Why on earth does your body store fat? What is fat? Insulation, I suppose, yeah. Okay. It can absorb trauma to some degree, so around your kidneys you have fat pads to protect the kidneys a little bit, and around your eyes, around your heart from trauma. But the real reason is that fat is energy. A lot of energy in fat. So it's a perfect way to store energy for your body. And what is energy? We talk about energy all the time. Yeah? This fat can be used to make ATP to run your body. But what is energy? You might have to take a physics class or something to know something about energy. But what, everybody talks about energy, 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 energy. What is it? It gives us the ability to do something. What does it give us the ability to do? To do work. That's really a good definition of energy. It's a store of potential to do some kind of work. So when you have a lot of energy, what does that mean? You can do a lot of work. If you don't have any energy, can't do a lot of work. So just kind of match those concepts up like that. So your body stores energy in the form of lipids, which is stored inside this adipocyte, right? It's called a fat cell in your book, but what should you really call it? A fat cell is kind of like a high school way of talking about it, right? It's really an adipocyte, right? Adipocyte. Adipose is fat and cyte is cell. Now, this is a little bit strange for connective tissue because where do we find all of that adipose? Is it inside the cell or outside the cell? Inside the cell. And remember, we said for connective tissue, the important space is really the matrix, which is outside the cell. But that's not the case for adipose connective tissue. The important feature is intracellular fat. All right, so that's kind of an atypical kind of connective tissue. Okay. All right, so that's it for the kinds of connective tissues. And the names of cells. All right, let's look at the muscle tissue. Okay, where's muscle tissue at? Muscle. What is muscle specialized to do? Yeah, it contracts. Okay. And muscle looks like this. All right, so what's immediately standing out? What do you see? Maybe even makes you dizzy. Maybe nauseated. All of these stripes right here. And these stripes are what we call striations. Right, so you see all these vertical bands? These are striations because inside these cells there's a very special kind of arrangement of proteins that repeats itself over and over and over again, thousands of times from one end of the muscle cell to the other. And a skeletal muscle cell makes up skeletal muscles, like this would be the triceps brachii and the biceps in your anterior arm. And what kind of control do you have over these muscles, like your biceps? Okay. Does it contract automatically on its own, or do you control when it contracts? You control it. We call that voluntary control as opposed to involuntary. So skeletal muscle is under voluntary control, and as a matter of fact, skeletal muscle is the only thing in your whole body that you do have control over. Everything else is controlled automatically or autonomically with your autonomic nervous system. All right, so these cells, right, besides being striated, what can you notice about their shape? Are they branched? No, they're long and narrow. They're straight. They're unbranched. And this is kind of strange, especially after we just looked at a red blood cell that didn't have any nucleus in it whatsoever. These cells are multinucleated. They could have hundreds of nuclei, maybe even 1,000 or more, because at one point in time, they were small cells that fused together to make a big, long fiber. Maybe 1,000 cells came together to make a big, long fiber, and all those nuclei still exist in that cell that developed as a result of that. So a skeletal muscle cell looks like a thread or a fiber, so guess what we call it? A fiber. So a skeletal muscle cell and a fiber are exactly the same thing. Okay. Under voluntary control. All right, now here is another slide. These cells are specialized to contract, so it's a type of muscle. And you see striations? Oh yeah. All right, so this kind of muscle is very similar to skeletal muscle if we look on the inside of it. When we get the muscle, we'll see why these muscles have striations. All right, so, but we should notice that there is a difference. What would be a difference between this slide and the previous one? Okay, one nucleus per cell, and the cell only goes from this really dark band to this dark band right here. This is what we call an intercalated disc. So these cells are short. Skeletal muscle cells are long. Cardiac muscle cells are short, but what else? Look at this right here. Zip, zip. It's branched. Cardiac muscle cells are highly branched. Right? And I can see some more branching over here, some more branching over here. So that's a nice giveaway that this is cardiac muscle. It has striations, but it's branched, and we should see these intercalated discs. Okay. The heart, when it pumps blood, has to beat as a unit. One part of the heart can't pump 1 second, and then 5 seconds later another part, and then 5 seconds later another part, because it won't pump any blood, right? It's got to contract as a unit. So these junctions between the cells make sure that the heart beats as a unit, so that when one muscle cell contracts, what happens to the whole heart? The whole heart contracts, and then it can pump blood out. So these intercalated discs have conduits for electrical activity to go from one cell to another, and we call that a gap junction. So that electrical signal can be shared not only from right to left, but how? Also from top to bottom, because these cells are branched, so that throughout the whole heart wall, all of these muscle cells contract as a unit when it's told to contract. Now, would that be good for skeletal muscle? Would it be good, for instance, if you tell your biceps brachii to contract, if all of a sudden all the muscles in your body contracted? No. That would be really awkward, right? You'd reach out to grab a bottle of water, and what would happen? Your whole body would contract. Okay? So skeletal muscle is different, right? The structure is different, which means what? That translates to?
Function.
The function changes. That's right. If you change the structure, you change the function of something. Right? So that's why we're looking at all these different kinds of cells. But we see that sometimes the structure is similar, namely striations, but in other ways, cardiac muscle is different. And do you have voluntary control over cardiac muscle?
Nope,
you don't. You can't really control your heart rate. Oh, you can play around with it a bit. Maybe you could meditate, right? Like, think of yourself on a beach at Cancun somewhere. You just got done with dinner. You got a couple margaritas. So what's happening to your heart rate? It's kind of going down. You're relaxing. Or you could meditate and think, I got a practicum on Wednesday, a week from today. What happens to your heart rate? It goes up. So you can influence your heart rate, but you can't really control it like skeletal muscle. Okay? Or your instructor can control your heart rate. Like I could say, okay, put your books away. We're going to have a pop test right now. Okay, so your heart rate probably just went way up. All right. But I was just kidding. Okay. Even if you guys wanted one for points, I couldn't give it to you. All right, so that's two kinds of muscles. You see some similarities and differences. Here's another kind. All right, this is the most worthless picture in your book, but this is smooth muscle. And if you look at this on a big picture, a nice, good, clear picture, you should see no striations associated with it. because it's missing some of those features that we find in skeletal and cardiac muscle. The contractile elements are a lot different. And these are very short kinds of cells. Let's see if maybe if I can put the screen up. This is what they really look like. All right? Can you see that? You can see that, sort of. They're kind of spiculated cells. They have two pointy ends. Think of maybe a football that's been stretched out. That's what a smooth muscle cell looks like. So would you say that's branched?
No.
Nope, it's not branched, but it's not long and linear either, like a skeletal muscle. And it doesn't have striation, so what can you tell me about the function of smooth muscle compared to those other kinds of muscles that we talked about? It's got to be different, right? Because the structure is different, so the function is going to be different. And a nice, easy, quick example would be to demonstrate that here's some right here. Here's a bunch of smooth muscle cells. You can see they have those pointy ends right there. Okay. What would be a good way to demonstrate the difference in function between skeletal muscle and smooth muscle? Well, where do we find smooth muscle? Yeah. Walls of hollow organs, like the digestive tract, reproductive tract, like fallopian tube, uterus, things like that. Respiratory tract has smooth muscle. So let's consider the reproductive tract. Oh yeah, you got digestive tract on the slide right here. Okay. Well, let's get one of our, like a baseball player, a pitcher. He's got a really strong arm for throwing fastballs. And let's get a 9-pound weight. All right, what is 9 pounds really heavy? Yeah, not really. Okay, and then let's have him, okay, do a curl, that 9-pound weight, and now hold that weight with your arm flexed for 9 months. What's he going to do? Or her, maybe it's a softball pitcher on the women's team. Yeah, you know, 5 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, and what's going to happen to that skeletal muscle? Yeah. It's going to give out, right? You're going to fatigue, right? So skeletal muscle will fatigue very easily, but what about the uterus, uterine muscle, that has to maintain a pregnancy for 9 months and hold a fetus in position for months and months on end, right? Much, much different, right? So the structure of these cells have to be a lot different because they perform vastly different functions. Okay. All right, so that's muscle tissue. The last kind of tissue is nervous tissue. And nervous tissue is made up of two kinds of cells. So muscle had three kinds. Nervous tissue's got only two kinds. And the first kind is illustrated right here. You can see that it has all of these projections coming out of the center of mass of the cell. Within the center of the cell, we have the nucleus and organelles. The center of the cell is what we call the cell body, and it runs around with another name called the soma. Maybe you've heard of soma. Soma and cell body are exactly the same thing. But these projections can run long ways within the body. There's usually one really long one that we call an axon, and then there's a bunch of shorter ones over here that we call dendrites. These are neurons. They carry and transmit electrical impulses over long distances because of these projections, that axon projection. And it's very fast, so that's a very fast way to control distant parts of your body. And the way information flows over a neuron is from a dendrite. So the dendrite is the receiving end, and then it flows over the cell body and then down the axon to the axon terminus like that. So it's just a one-way street. The information can't flow in both directions. So this is the first kind of cell. This is a neuron. The other kinds of cells aren't diagrammed right here, but when we get into nervous system, we'll look at some in particular. I see nuclei of other cells in the micrograph right here, but they don't have dendrites. They don't have axons. These are what we call support cells. And otherwise, we would call those neuroglia cells. I'm not going to write it on the board because here it is in your notes right here. A neuroglial cell or a neuroglia cell. These maintain the health of the neurons. All right, so they keep these neurons healthy. We'll describe some other functions, but they also tell how they also tell where these neurons should connect up, right? Where the axon should go, right? So the neuroglia cells actually determine what the network is like inside our brain and spinal cord. And so that's actually a very important function, right? So a lot of times, for years and years and years, researchers and physicians were only interested in neurons because they transmitted information, but it's the neuroglia that tell the neurons what to do. So now everybody realizes what an important job the neuroglia are doing. They work together with the neurons to make sure that we have a nice functioning nervous system. Okay. So these projections, sometimes we call that a process. It can either be a dendrite or a really long axon going someplace. All right, so those are the two kinds of cells. All right, so those are your four tissues, epithelium, connective muscle, and nervous tissue. And before I go to some more slides, there's a couple last things we need to talk about. Some membranes. And some of this we talked about already. All right, the two main kinds of membranes can be classified either as mucous membranes or serous membranes. A mucous membrane lines a cavity that is this ringing a bell? Yeah, I like that. Could be moist or wet, for instance, but it lines a cavity that is, here's a perfect definition for it, that's open to the outside world. So for instance, your nasal cavity, is that open to the outside world? Absolutely. It's got a mucous membrane around it. Oral cavity, open to the outside world, right? How about urinary tract? That's open to the outside world. That's a mucous membrane. Digestive tract. The whole digestive tract really is open to the outside world. And so that has a mucous membrane around it as well. So mucous membranes sometimes, or most times, secrete mucus. That's a slippery substance, mucopolysaccharide. Does anybody know what kind of cell makes mucus? Did I mention that? I hope I did. Well, I got to go back and show you. All right. It's called a goblet cell. A goblet cell makes mucus. All right. So some mucous membranes, or most mucous membranes, have goblet cells that secrete mucus, but not all of them. But that's not a definition of a mucous membrane. The definition is what? It's got to be in a cavity that's open to the outside of the body, whether it secretes mucus or not. Okay. The other kind of membrane is what we call a serous membrane. And we talked about serous membranes before. You have a number of them. They're found lining cavities that are not open to the outside world, like the pleural cavity that your lungs are in, the cavity that your heart is in. What do we call the cavity that your heart is in? Pericardium. And the peritoneal cavity, which is the abdominal pelvic cavity put together, all right, has a serous membrane as well. And serous membranes are a little bit more complicated because it's not just one layer. There are actually three important parts to a serous membrane. And you even have a little animation in Blackboard where you can look and see how the pleural cavity forms. Okay. So let's look at a nice figure of some of these things. Okay, here we got mucous membrane, but these are the membranes that I actually want to look at, and let's look at this right here. We'll really zoom in. All right, so here we have the heart. Okay, right on the surface of the heart is one part of a serous membrane. And the heart is a visceral organ. So the part of the serous membrane that touches the visceral organ is called the visceral division of the serous membrane. All right, but it is continuous with the membrane that actually forms the cavity, the pericardium. So this division right here is what we call the parietal division of the serous membrane. We got visceral and parietal division, and then the third part is the serous cavity filled with serous fluid. So that's what we have around the pericardium. We have the same membrane system around the lungs. So this would be the visceral, what do we call the membrane around the lungs? That's the pleura, right? So this would be the visceral pleura, and this would be the parietal pleura right here. And in between, you have the serous fluid. Okay. And the same thing for the peritoneum, if we come over here. This part of the serous membrane that's right up against the body wall, that's the parietal peritoneum. Notice that it is continuous and flows right over the surface of the visceral organs of the abdomen and pelvis. So this would be the visceral peritoneum. Hey, boss.
Hey.
How's it going?
Just checking out the new setup.
Yeah, still working, no smoke. It's really good. Okay. All right, so these are all serous membranes. Okay. There are other kinds of membranes in our body. Our skin, we can consider that a membrane. We would call that the cutaneous membrane, our skin. Synovial membranes that make up our joints kind of are like serous membranes because they actually secrete joint fluid into a cavity, but we call that a synovial membrane. And then there's a membrane that surrounds every bone in your body, and we call that the periosteum. Remember, anytime you hear that osteo, you should think of bone. Peri just means surrounding. Periosteum is the membrane that surrounds every bone. And then there are cavities inside bones that contain marrow, and they have a membrane that flows over the surface of all the little cavities inside a bone. We don't call that the periosteum. We call that the endosteum. Okay. All right, so that's it for tissues. All right, so we're almost fatigued, but not quite. Let's look at some of these, let's go over some of these slides that I want to show you. Okay. And I think I'll turn the recorder off now because this gets really boring to hear.